Foreign ministers of the 19 member nations of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization meet tomorrow in Reykjavik, Iceland. At the top of their agenda is the creation of a new relationship with Russia by setting up a body called the NATO-Russia Council. That step, coupled with the expected enlargement of the alliance later this year, is raising fundamental questions about the future purpose of NATO. NPR's Mike Schuster reports.
NATO and Russia have been trying to figure out ways of working together since the collapse of the Berlin Wall 13 years ago. But those efforts have not been effective, as various crises and conflicts, such as the war in Kosovo and the bombing of Iraq, have gotten in the way. Russia has remained aloof from NATO, and the nations of NATO have remained distrustful of Russia. Until now. This week, NATO is expected to set up a mechanism that will treat Russia as an equal in many respects, says Robert Hunter. Hunter is a former U.S. ambassador to NATO and co-author of a recent RAND Corporation report on NATO-Russia cooperation.
Everybody will sit around equally at the table. Russia will take its place alphabetically with everybody else, and there'll be one chairman, the head of NATO, the Secretary General, Lord Robertson. And in effect, the old stigma of 19 on one side and one on the other will be removed.
According to senior officials of the Bush administration, the purpose is to cooperate on practical issues where Russia and NATO share a common goal and to give Russia the opportunity to shape NATO policies in those areas. Most frequently mentioned are counterterrorism and the fight to halt the spread of weapons of mass destruction. But Russia will not be able to block key NATO decisions, Undersecretary of State Mark Grossman recently told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
The body will not give Russia the ability to veto any NATO actions in any area. It is not a backdoor to NATO membership. The NATO-Russia Council will not infringe on NATO's prerogatives. NATO members will continue to take any decision by consensus on any issue.
Most importantly, administration officials say, on whether to use military force. The Russians see it a little differently.
It's very important to create a mechanism where Russia is an insider, not an outsider.
This is not Russian membership in NATO, agrees Sergei Rogov, who also participated in the RAND Corporation report. But it will permit full Russian involvement, he says, in decision-making on issues that matter to Russia. It is impossible to imagine any issue confronting NATO right now that would not matter to Russia. From Afghanistan to Iraq to the Balkans to the Middle East, any potential NATO military action would certainly concern Moscow. NATO is also expected to invite new members to join later this year, possibly as many as seven. Most often mentioned are Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, which are former republics of the Soviet Union, Bulgaria, Romania, and Slovakia, all former allies of the Soviet Union, and Slovenia, a former part of Yugoslavia. If NATO expands to 26 nations and the NATO-Russia Council operates successfully, the nature of the alliance will inevitably change. Lacking a foreign enemy and reluctant to mount military operations elsewhere, NATO's primary job could very well boil down to the prevention of war among its members. Sergei Rogov does not see that as a bad idea.
Besides its main mission, collective defense against external attack, NATO served a very important purpose, prevention of conflict among Western countries, which for centuries used to fight against each other, and NATO succeeded in that.
Many experts in the United States do not favor such an evolution for NATO. Among them is Strobe Talbot, Deputy Secretary of State during the Clinton years.
That has, I think, a dangerous implication. It suggests that NATO's time has come and gone, and that NATO really lost its reason for being with the end of the Cold War. And now NATO is going to be allowed to evolve into something not dissimilar to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which is much more political than it is military. I think it would be too bad to go in that direction.
But it appears that the Bush administration is not averse to that. Immediately after September 11th, NATO invoked the principle that an attack on one is considered to be an attack on all. But when the U.S. went to war in Afghanistan, it did so on its own initiative, picking a few nations to be a part of the so-called coalition of the willing. If the Bush administration presses military action against Iraq, it is likely that it will also go it alone or with a coalition of like-minded nations, but not with NATO as a whole. Even under these circumstances, there would still be a valuable military role for NATO to play, says General William Odom, former head of the National Security Agency.
If NATO has no foreign enemy, we would still need it because it's the only place we train for coalition warfare. You need it as a training area. And then, if you've got these capabilities, you don't have to go with a NATO flag as a coalition of the willing to do other things.
Back in 1989, when the Berlin Wall came down, Mikhail Gorbachev urged NATO to transform itself, a recommendation that American leaders resisted for many years. now, with NATO moving closer to Russia and contemplating a significant expansion of its horizons, the alliance may in the end fulfill Gorbachev's vision. Mike Schuster, NPR News, Los Angeles.